It's Monday here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm your host, Chris Carter, here with Brian Batko of the Steelers beat here at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We're going to power rank all of the Steelers position groups. Who's the best? Who's the worst? Who could be the fastest risers? That and more, as well as Pirates coverage from Noah Hiles, all here in the North Shore Drive podcast. Let's get into it. You are now listening to the North Shore Drive podcast, a show on all things Pittsburgh sports from the writers of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, hosted by Christopher Carter. Hello and welcome to the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm your host, Chris Carter, here with Brian Batko, one of our great Steelers beat writers here at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And as always, you can find the show on your favorite podcasting apps and on YouTube. Like this video if you enjoy it. Subscribe to this YouTube channel to get all of the Monday, Wednesday, Friday episodes of the North Shore Drive podcast, as well as the daily content that comes out from all of our Pittsburgh sports writers here at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And as always, this show is brought to you by the best bar in Pittsburgh. Go to Mike's Beer Bar today, and you can get to see why they're the best bar in Pittsburgh. They have over 500 different available beers. 300 of those beers are from the local Pittsburgh area, and 80 of those local beers are available on tap. There's so much to experience at Mike's. More on why they are the best bar in Pittsburgh later. Brian, happy July, my friend. We've made it to the last month where we have to kind of fight our way through to training camp. Training camp's at the end of this month. How you doing, sir?
Yeah, we're in the deep waters right now, the off season, which is why we're going into the power rankings mode here for today's show. To be honest, not a lot happening right now with the Steelers, so it's kind of a good time to reset, reframe how we might view some things and bat around some different opinions and whatnot about the state of the team in 2024, given that there's not going to be a lot of movement anytime soon. Cue the Brandon Ayuk trade right now.
That would be so perfect. Is after we record this trade happens. We're not going to talk about that kind of stuff. We wanted this time to take a chance to reflect on a few things, because I actually think framing it this way could lead to some interesting parts of this discussion about which groups are for better, for worse, or which groups we think might be better than what we think, and what the gaps are. So let's start with the worst, what we think is the worst position group right now if we were to power rank the Steelers right now. I want to give the floor to you, Brian. Who do you have as the worst? By the way, we broke this down into 11 groups.
Fullbacks. We have probably the fullbacks.
Because there aren't. We have quarterbacks, running backs, receivers, tight ends, offensive line, defensive line, outside linebackers, inside linebackers, cornerbacks, safeties, and special teams as a whole. So with all that being said, that's 11 groups to break down that we're going to talk about and rank here in a second. Brian, who's the one you have at the bottom of that list right now?
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's a couple different ways you can look at this discussion, Chris. I mean, number one, you could try to really get into where every unit for the Steelers ranks among the rest of the league. But I mean, that's a very difficult undertaking to do, especially in early July. I didn't sit here and go through all 32 depth charts before this podcast. So I'm going to look at it more as, okay, you know, on the 2024 Steelers, what position group is most likely to kind of give them quality play week in and week out, from top to bottom, talent, depth, you know, who's not going to be a reason why this team struggles, or least likely to be a reason why this team struggles. So that's kind of how I'm viewing it. And obviously at times those two ways of doing the power rankings will overlap, but either way you slice it, I would put the wide receiver group last as of now. And I think that's why the Steelers are still kicking the tires on Brandon Ayuk. I would assume it's a case where they know what they're willing to offer. The Niners know where they stand. And Ayuk is now on record himself as saying he would like to play for the Steelers if he's not back in San Francisco. So the fact that we're even still talking about that, and he's still talking about that, and the Steelers are probably still open to that to some extent. Yeah, I mean, it's an indicative of George Pickens, and then a whole lot of maybe iffy, could they take a step forward type of guys rounding out that group.
That's the thing. I had him. I'm right with you. I had the wide receivers as the lowest ranked on the team on the team's position groups right now, particularly because you just don't know what's behind George Pickens right now. You're hopeful for Calvin Austin. You're hopeful for Roman Wilson, and then you have a bunch of guys that you're hopeful that some veterans can figure it out, and that's why they're right there. Who's the next group up?
This might be controversial, maybe a hot take, but I'm going to put the quarterbacks here.
Oh, we're on the same page, Brian. We got the same two.
Yeah. I mean, hey, I think it's an upgrade probably from last year. You know, if second year Kenny Pickett and late season cameo by Mason Rudolph could still allow the Steelers to win that many games and sneak into the playoffs, then you'd think Russell Wilson will be able to at least replicate that, if not improve. But for as good as the counting numbers and the box score stuff looked for him in 2023 in Denver, still a reason why Sean Payton and company with the Broncos ate all that money for him to go away. When you listen to some of the analysts from out there in the Mile High City kind of discuss what went wrong, a lot of them do not speak highly of the way Wilson played, and they were watching it more intently week in and week out. They were taking stock of sort of the dynamics there with him as a leader for that team and starting quarterback. So jury's still out for me on Russ and how he's going to compare to other quarterbacks around the league in 2024.
I hear you there. I think that's where I'm at with the quarterbacks, is that we just don't know a lot about it. And Russell Wilson, there are questions about him, just like there's questions about Justin Fields and a lot of other positions. And that's where I'm kind of at there. All right, so we've gotten the bottom two groups. They're the two groups most responsible for the passing game. Who's your third worst? So I guess we want an 11 and 10. Who's your ranked ninth on your power ranking for position groups for the Steelers?
Another unit that plays heavily into the passing game, but on the opposite side of the ball. I'm going to put the cornerbacks in this slot here, Chris. Really high on Joey Porter Jr. Think he'll be even better in his second season. And, you know, he's going to be able to match up with some of the best receivers in the league, I think. But after that, it's sort of similar to the predicament at receiver. You know, you've got Dante Jackson, who's probably more established as a starting veteran than anybody else behind George Pickens. But there's also a reason why Carolina was probably going to cut him if they didn't part with him via trade. And that's exactly what they did to acquire Deontay Johnson from Pittsburgh. So he's your number two. After that, there's potential, but very little proven other than Cam Sutton, who can be an insurance policy on the outside for Jackson, but I think is more so going to factor into the slot and should at least strengthen the slot position for the Steelers at corner more so than it was a month ago.
So you have corners at your ninth ranked here. I have special teams ranked ninth, particularly because I still got to see who this punter is. You know, I got to see what happens there. Chris Boswell's doing fine, but I got to see who the punter is. I got to see how the new kickoff rules impact everything. How is that going to change the strategy there? Again, it's more about the unknown for the Steelers for me when I rank these guys lower. When I rank them lower, I'm not saying that these are terrible. Like, I actually think Russell Wilson will do better for the Steelers this year. I think that could be a big part of why they might be more successful this year than they have been in recent years. But I still think that if I'm being objective about where that group is versus every other group, answer is I have a lot of question marks. The less question marks I have that are, you know, questioning if you're good or not, the better. And that's why I put special teams there. But right after special teams in the eighth spot for me, that's where I have cornerbacks there, particularly because of what you said. I think Joey Porter Jr. is on his way up. And I've said, I think Dante Jackson and Cameron Sutton could be great fits for what they're trying to do this year. But we don't know. We got to see if Cam Sutton can get it back. We got to see if Dante Jackson's a fit, or if both of them getting toasted last year quite a few times is a very bad sign. All those things still need to be figured out. So that's whether they're at my eight, they're at your nine. Who is your eighth best position here?
Well, I will go ahead and spoil where I have the special teams ranked, because we talked a lot about them a couple weeks ago on the show last time I was with you. And I don't think it's really that suspenseful to see where I'm going to put Chris Boswell, Cameron Johnston, Christian Kuntz, and, you know, a group of guys led by Miles Killebrew. But that's all pro Miles Killebrew to you, Chris. So I've got them third, actually, in my list.
Whoa.
So much higher on the Steelers' ability there, just because I think Chris Boswell's probably a top three or four kicker in the league. The stats say Cameron Johnston will be a top five or six punter in the league. That could change going from Houston to Pittsburgh. And Cordarrelle Patterson, you know, needs no introduction. And Miles Killebrew, again, returning all pro. So I've got them a lot higher, but we'll move on to my eighth ranked team here. Probably before we get to a break, I'm going D-line because okay. I still like Cam Hayward at the top, but could be fading obviously. And dealing with those injuries is a real concern. Larry Ogunjobi may be the biggest disappointment on the roster in 2023, if we're being honest. And I thought he was a cut candidate, but they're going to, you know, roll it back out there with him and hope he improves. And Keanu Benton is good, but you know, is he a great sort of number two at this point in his career? And how much of a leap will he take after those three? You know, you get into the disappointments of DeMarvin Leal, Isaiah Loudermilk.
Yeah.
Dean Lowry's a guy who's been around. I think he'll be solid, but not spectacular. So, yeah, there's a lot of dudes on this roster with NFL caliber experience, but I just wonder if they're going to be game changers and game wreckers, at least other than Cam Hayward and maybe in flashes Keanu Benton.
There's a lot of questions there. There's your bottom. Here's your 11th through 8th squad and Brian's third squad there. We'll get to the rest of these rankings after this first break here in the North Shore Drive podcast. But first, we'll remind you this show is brought to you by Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. When you go to Mike's Beer Bar, they have over 500 different available beers. 300 of those beers are from the local Pittsburgh area, and 80 of those local beers are available on tap all day, every day. When you go to Mike's Beer Bar, they also have amazing food like steak on a stone, where you get your choice cut of steak brought to you on a heated stone. You press that steak into the stone, and then you choose how well done you want every single bite. They have tons of stuff going on all the time, whether you're in town before a Pirates game, before, during, or after. It's a great location right on the North Shore across the street from PNC Park. You can sit outside and get a great view of downtown Pittsburgh. It's Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in Pittsburgh. Go there today, and when you get there, tell them Chris sent you.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
We're back here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm Chris Carter. He's Brian Batko. Brian, let's continue our power rankings here. We're into the top seven now. You listed defensive line at your eighth spot there. Who's next on your list?
I'm going to go flip over the ball and go to the offensive line because I think there's really solid guards there with Isaac Seumalo and James Daniels, but you know, I don't know that anybody's confusing them with prime Quentin Nelson or anything like that, right. But you just hope they'll stabilize things, give Russell Wilson a clean pocket to step into, or Justin Fields if we get to that point. Broderick Jones could certainly blossom as an elite tackle in the league in year two once he gets his feet under him, but we don't even necessarily know where he's going to play just yet because of the presence of Dan Moore and Troy Fautanu, this year's first rounder. As much as I like the talent of Fautanu, as well as the second round pick, Zach Frazier, who pretty sure is going to start at center at week one in Atlanta, there's going to be a learning curve with those rookies. You can only, you know, sort of put too much.
Every rookie.
Yeah, you can only put too much faith in a couple guys who are going to be starting out of the gate at this level. You know, even though they were highly successful, really polished products coming out of college, there's going to be a jump in competition. So I've got them just on the other side of the bottom half of the Steelers position groups.
seven is where I have the defensive line, but sixth is where I have the offensive line. Similar thinking there. I think the biggest difference is we ranked special teams differently, but I'm with you on the offensive line. Like, I think there's a ton of potential. Like, this could rise up to be a top three group on the team very quickly this year if things go right. I mean,
year or two ago, Chris, this group was 11th, probably.
Right, they were the worst. They were the worst on the team and one of the worst in all of the in all of football. So the fact that they're up in the middle of the pack right now is a good sign. And with all the youth in this group, that could be the most promising. I think they have the best chance. If there's a group that could rise the most in this, in these position groups, I think it is the offensive line, because I think we saw some really good things from Broderick Jones. I think that Zach Frazier, if he just comes in and he stabilizes the center position, he doesn't even have to be rookie Marquise Pouncey. If he can just be better than what Mason Cole was last year, and let's face it, people were happy to have Mason Cole back last year because he wasn't Kendrick Green from 2 years before that. It will be a similar feeling if Zach Frazier even just meets that bar. So if he does that, Broderick Jones takes a step forward, and either Dan Moore Jr. just doesn't stink up the joint, or Troy Faltano comes in and lights it up, or Dan Moore comes in and lights it up. Maybe this is coming out year. I think them with Daniels and Seumalo, they could be in the top three when all said and done. But I gave away my six. Who's your sixth best position?
I'll go with the safeties here. Minkah Fitzpatrick he's in line for a bounce back year, but obviously wasn't great a season ago. I like the Deshaun Elliott pickup a lot. I think he'll be the best kind of strong safety that the Steelers have had in quite some time.
Yeah.
And DeMonte Casey, you know, still can probably fly around and make some plays for them on the back end. I think he'll be better in small doses than he had to be last year, playing in a bigger role than really maybe anybody anticipated for him. So not a sexy position on the roster by any means. They pretty much ran it back with the exception of bringing in Elliott. And while he's a good, solid signing, it's not like he was bringing the excitement of a Russell Wilson or Justin Fields this offseason.
I feel you on that. I feel you that the safeties are there. I have them a little bit higher, but I have in my fifth spot there, I have the tight end positions. And I know some people are going to be thinking, wait a minute, that's a really deep group. Right, it is. But I think that the tight ends still have a lot to prove. I think that Pat Freiermuth needs to prove that he can be a primary threat of a tight end. I think that he's flashed it. He's been a red zone threat when Ben Roethlisberger is around. And some of it isn't Pat Freiermuth's fault. The Steelers just haven't had a well-coordinated offense or top-tier quarterback play to set Pat Freiermuth up with a lot. But I think there's potential with Darnell Washington, but we need to see some of that potential actually be realized. And I think Connor Hayward's a very fine third option who can help you as an H-back at times and do these little different things. But I think they have some comeuppance to do to prove this year. And that's why I actually have the safety group ranked just ahead of them at fourth, because I think the superstar power of Minkah Fitzpatrick puts that group over this group to me. I think Deshaun Elliott could be a good fit. I think DeMonte Casey is a very fine third option there. And we'll see what we see with Ryan Watts, because as you've talked about here on the show, there's a potential for him to be an interesting addition there. So they have some youth in the safety room as well. Granted, some youth that has to transition to the position. But that's why I have them at four, because of the superstar power and the veterans that they've added around Minkah Fitzpatrick. Who's your four?
Well, I think we didn't do my fifth yet, I believe, which is...
I thought the safeties were your fifth. Apologies.
They were sixth. Yeah, inside linebackers, fifth for me.
Okay.
But my four, five, six, I think, are all pretty bunched up, because you do have, proven Pro Bowl / All-Pro type guys in those defensive crews. I think Patrick Queen is going to stabilize that group. I still think Elandon Roberts has another good year left in him, and Peyton Wilson might be ready to help out immediately.
Yeah.
It's just that you haven't seen Queen and Wilson do it in the Steelers defense yet. So that's why I have them one rung below the tight ends. I'm a little higher on their potential this year than you, just slightly. I think Pat Freiermuth will establish himself as a go-to guy this year. I think Darnell Washington, will he break out and be catching a whole bunch of passes? No, probably not, but I think he'll improve on the marginal production as a rookie. And I still think Connor Hayward is somebody who is going to be a piece of the puzzle in an Arthur Smith offense that loves to throw it to the tight ends.
I hear you on that. I have
I think all three of those guys can do their jobs
right
pretty well. So that's why I've got them fourth.
I think that might be the most complete group. Like if you like the tight end room needs three people, that's pretty good. And the crazy part is you still got guys Hot Rod Williams, Rodney Williams.
Yeah.
He could be an answer there, and he's on the practice squad. So
Michael Pruitt.
Right. There's options there. Okay. So now we're in your top four. I've revealed the safeties are my fourth best group position group. Who's your fourth?
So the tight ends were my fourth. We're screwed up because I had the special teams.
That's third. I think I keep forgetting special teams is your three, and that's why
that our top two are the same. But if you want to talk at all about that would mean your inside backers are third.
Yes, correct. My inside linebackers group is third. That's where I think Patrick Queen is a known commodity for me because I've seen enough of him to be like, okay, I get what he brings to the table. You and I have talked a lot about how Landon Roberts is a very good piece to that group. And I've as a person who had to cover Peyton Wilson in the ACC, I think that he could be a great fit, an unknown great fit, because we got to see how it plays out and if he can stay healthy. But that with the potential of even just getting a Cole Holcomb back, if it's midseason, I think inside linebacker could be really special. So with that
another
being
position
said,
that would have been bottom two or three just a year or two ago, probably on this list.
Mm-hmm, because of the revamping they've had to do there. And I think that's another sign of just the flipping the Steelers have done in short order to fix this roster in a lot of spaces. You know, offensive line was at the bottom of the list. Now they're in the middle. Inside linebacker was at the bottom of the list. Now they're close to the top. There's a lot of groups like that. Safeties a few years back before they got Minkah Fitzpatrick was down there. Now they're at the top, and I think that's the really interesting part. And also this position, running back, was not too well liked after the Le'Veon Bell era. I think James Conner held it down for a little bit, but obviously there were issues there. Is running back your number two spot?
It is. Yes,
it's mine too.
I considered the number one spot, but you know, there's a certain guy who wears number 90 who plays edge rusher for the Steelers, who pretty much is like the trump card in any ranking of their position groups or really any roster analysis. So, I mean, Najee Harris and Jaylen Warren, I think they've actually become a little bit underrated around the league.
I think so too.
I think it was PFF who had them ranked like 15th or 16th, maybe even lower.
Jeez.
In running back rooms around the league. I don't really understand that one. Maybe there's some advanced metrics there, but Jaylen Warren's advanced metrics are great. Najee Harris's, you know, traditional stats are pretty darn good. So, and you just, you know, as beat writers who watch these guys week in and week out, you know, we saw the 2023 that they had, how well they complemented each other after a little bit of a rough start. But once this team sort of figured out more of that being their identity, those two guys were really productive in the backfield, and I think they will be again.
Same here. I think that in this new offense too, I think you're going to see a different dynamic for both of these guys to get to expand their roles in the offense. I think that could be really special, and I think, you know, this could be a year where they flip a lot of narratives on their head, and they are recognized as maybe the best running back duo in football as far as a 1-2 punch. But all that being said, Brian, that means we both made the outside linebackers the top. And like you said, it's pretty obvious, but I think it even goes beyond TJ Watt.
Yeah, it does, for sure.
I think Alex Highsmith has done some amazing work to improve. He's become one of the better edge rushers in the NFL. It's just the thing is that he's next to the best edge rusher in the NFL. So I think less people, it's hard to shine bright next to a supernova, but he still finds a way to do that. And this group has Nick Herbig, who did very well for a mid-round pick rookie that they brought in last season. So I look at this group's got depth, and their starters are superstars.
Yeah, I mean, you hope you never have to find out who the fourth guy is, but we know injuries do happen, especially at that position, have happened the last couple seasons with TJ Watt. So I think Herbig is primed, ready to break out, you know, with more of a role now that Marcus Golden is gone. He kind of bridged the gap to Herbig for a year, and Herbig was able to reshape his body a little bit. Also just understand the speed of the game. And I think he's going to be ready to hit the ground running as that, you know, unquestioned number three behind two all pro bowl caliber guys in Watt and Highsmith. So they're going to be tough for teams to account for in blocking. And they're the biggest reason why there's still a chance, I think, for the Steelers defense to be elite top five unit in the NFL in 2024.
I'm right with you. I think that they could be truly special, and I think this defense could be truly special, but it starts with them. Both of us ranking wide receivers as the worst group, but outside linebackers is as the best. Last thought here, Brian, because we've been doing this for a minute now, is the way that these groups ended up ranking, is this a way that can function for a team, or with the quarterbacks and receivers being so low and that being such an important part in today's NFL, is that a problem within itself that you think gets in the Steelers' way this year?
I mean, it could, but I think the biggest issue here will be, since Omar Khan and Andy Weidel sort of took the reins of building this roster, it's been their stated goal to, you know, build this from the inside out, the trenches, be a team that can break an opponent's will throughout a game. For that to happen, they're putting some of those, they're getting some of that constructed, but the O-line is going to need to prove to be more of a strength than we both are projecting it to be. And the D-line is going to need to be able to stop the run to also play that kind of bully ball on the other side of things. So, the deficiencies or perceived deficiencies in the pass game can be papered over to an extent if you're absolutely kicking the crap out of teams, running it and getting a lead, benefiting from that game script and playing to your strengths rather than needing to play to what's, you know, more than likely your weaknesses compared to the rest of the league.
Absolutely. He's Brian Batko of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, one of our great Steelers beat writers here. Brian, thanks so much for joining me. We still got Pirates talk to talk about here. We'll do so with Noah Hiles here in a minute. But first, I want to remind you, this show is also brought to you by Moon Township Honda, where you can go get your new Honda today. That you can find them at 5802 University Boulevard in Moon Township, Pennsylvania, or visit their website, moonhonda.com. Here's a message from our friends at Moon Township Honda.
To build the Honda CR-V hybrid, we took everything you love about the CR-V and kicked it up a notch with greater power for a CR-V unlike any before. Adventure confidently with Honda, Car and Driver's most awarded brand in 10 best history. The CR-V and CR-V Hybrid, part of the Honda line of rugged vehicles. Visit your local Honda dealer for new vehicles or arriving daily. Buy online or reserve from select Honda dealers.
We're back here on the North Shore Drive podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter. We switched to the Pittsburgh Pirates, who did win their Sunday contest against the Atlanta Braves. They're covering all of it. It was Noah Hiles, one of our great Pirates beat writers here at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Noah, how's it going in Atlanta?
It's beautiful, as always. It's hot. That's why they don't call it Coldlanta. It is very warm out here, but we will be – you like that? But we will be heading back here soon, and it's – you know, as big of a series it was this weekend, Carter, I mean, a very, very big series coming up, or homestand, I should say, coming up this week. So, you know, July baseball, this is where it really starts to count.
Absolutely. And speaking of times that count, I wanted to kind of lead off with comments from Ben Charrington. He recently did a radio interview, and I wanted to get your thoughts on him, especially these two particular parts of it, where he says, quote, "We're at a period where, as I've said before and don't mind saying again, where it makes sense for us to consider turning to certain players, maybe prospects, younger players, into players that can help our major league team improve in the short term." That sounds okay. Maybe there's something there. Then he also says, "If we're in it at the end and we're pushing into the postseason, it is most likely because we're a really good run prevention team. That's and we can win close low-scoring games. That's probably how we're going to do it." And Noah, I think people can read that first paragraph. By the way, Andrew Destin wrote that piece. Credit to him. People can read that first paragraph and think like, oh, okay, maybe something's coming down the pipeline. People read that last paragraph and they're like, wait a minute, that sounds like this team could very much just try to ride it out the way it is. What's your read on where the Pirates front office is trying to, what they're trying to do here over the next month or so?
Well, I think it's important to acknowledge the entire scope of this. Ben said from the beginning when we started asking him about trade deadline stuff, it's it's a seller's market, or yeah, it's a seller's market right now. Like there's only like four or five sellers and there's like 25 buyers, and it's the sellers are so bad. There's just not a lot of talent to be available. I mean, there's a couple of guys, you know, everyone likes to point out Luis Robert or maybe a JJ Bleda or, you know, someone of that note. But their cost is going to be exponentially higher because everyone's going to be bidding for them.
Right.
So I think Ben's saying, you know, they will, by him just pointing out the prospect part of it, is he's basically saying, no, we're not going to be sellers. It's just, what are we willing to part ways with? And the notion that he mentioned where if they make the playoffs, it's going to be because they win a lot of close ball games. That's simply because, I mean, one great bat does not fix the issues on this team. Unless you're going out and getting a Shohei Ohtani, which I don't think the Dodgers would be willing to part way with 1 year into his lifetime deal. So, yeah, I don't see that happening. So, yeah, I just don't it's a realistic comment that I don't know if it was phrased completely the right way. He was basically saying, like, well, this is our team right now. Mm-hmm. Even if we go out and we add a significant piece to improve the offense, it's still going to be a pitching-first group.
Gotcha.
And the bigger takeaway I had from what Charrington said was how he said it really still comes down to internal development here. Because his point was, if you look at simple math, they're not going to be able to add 5-6 new players at this trade deadline. Like that would just empty their farm system. And that would be a very unwise thing to do. So in order for them to truly become a better hitting team, even if they do acquire one or two new guys, they're going to need second half improvements from at least half the lineup. When you look around, I mean, Ke'Bryan Hayes has to be better in the second half. Rowdy Tellez has to continue what he did in June, and he has to keep doing it in July, August, and September. You need more from Jared Triolo. You need something from Jack Sawinski, something from Henry Davis, something from Michael A. Taylor. So that's what he means, where it's like, yeah, we can, you know, the Pirates, they can go out and get like one outfielder or one player, but that's not going to be enough to erase half the lineup having a horrible first half of the season. Some of these guys need to step up, and that's probably going to have to be the bigger part of this whole thing, just because there's no one out there that they can acquire that can account for two or three people not having a good year.
Right, and I think that's part of the issue here is that there's so many parts of this lineup that were supposed to be better than they were. O'Neill Cruz has certainly had moments this season, but as you wrote about the game, you know, his big homer in the game, it snapped an 0-for-13 streak, and we've seen him just be so hot and so cold. And I think the question on a lot of Pirates fans' minds is, where it was, you know, going back to development, when does he become a more consistent hitter, or is this always just who he's going to be?
I don't know. I mean, again, this is still – he has not played a full year in the major leagues yet. He just played his 162nd game last month. So, I mean, it's unfair, like, to, I think, put these expectations on him because of that. And it's – I understand that you see his age. He's 26. That's not a young big leaguer anymore. And we've been talking about the dude since he's, like, 20 years old. So that's another thing about it. But you consider a pandemic took away a whole year of development for him in the minor leagues. And then last year, which was supposed to be – what we're seeing this year was supposed to be him last year, right? That was supposed to be his first full season where he found his footing. He went through the highs and lows, and then it was supposed to come together this year. Well, last year he broke his ankle 9 games into the season. So it's just kind of pushed things back. And as frustrating as that is, I personally – I don't think O'Neill Cruz is the problem. If Rowdy Tellez had O'Neill Cruz's stats for this season, or if Michael A. Taylor had, or Jack Sawinski, or Henry Davis, or Ke'Bryan Hayes, if any of those players that I just named had his stat line, this team would be fighting for first place right now. O'Neill Cruz, at his worst, has still been a league average hitter statistically. So, yes, they're in I get it that the frustration comes with this guy shouldn't be a league average hitter. He is maybe the most raw athleticism that a Pirates had since Who even knows when? Maybe Bonds? I don't know. Mm-hmm. But it's just going to take time. And it one way this team does get hot is if he does become Superman in the second half and completely take over. But for me personally, I'm willing to handle his ups and downs because at least he's still producing some. Whereas there's so many other people on this team who are giving you absolutely nothing.
I hear that. I think that's one of the bigger questions is if they can get any from that group. What do you see happening with that group of guys you mentioned, Sawinski, Davis, and company?
I don't know. I mean, Davis's rehab assignment has been shut down temporarily after he went 0-for-6 with 5 strikeouts in Double A this week. And that just might be his concussion-like symptoms are still going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know when we get him back. Michael A. Taylor, Jack Sawinski, I don't know what you do with center field. Like, that's outfield is clearly an area where you have to add because you're just not getting anything offensively from two of those three outfield spots. And Brian Reynolds cannot do it all by himself all season long.
He's trying.
So he's trying his best. But yeah, it's not going to be sustainable. I think Sawinski needs to go back down to AAA. He's struck out in 43.5% of his at-bats since returning to the big leagues on June 4th. I mean, they sent him down there to fix things. He struck out 14 times in 28 at-bats, and they brought him back up because someone got hurt. And he hasn't been down since. So I don't really think he ever got a chance to get in a rhythm. I think Michael A. Taylor could benefit from something that they did with Rowdy Tellez in May, which is just basically sit him and only play him in the field late in games. They're kind of doing that right now. Maybe that will get him going. But they need outside help to help that offense. As far as other guys, I mean, Ke'Bryan Hayes has done this before, where he's looked bad in the first half and went scorched earth in the second half. They just need him to figure it out. I mean, that's not something where you look at like a guy like Sawinski or Davis and they're young. They're still learning how to be big leaguers. Like Ke'Bryan Hayes knows how to get through this. It's just a matter of him going out and doing it. So it's a lot of different individual cases here, but I mean, something's got to give eventually one way or another.
Very much so. You talked about how this is a big week coming up, and it is big. They're playing the Cardinals and the Mets both in Pittsburgh for these series all week long. Both these teams right in that conversation of that huge, you know, just group of teams that are fighting for that wild card spot. The Cardinals right in there at 43-40. The Mets right behind them at 40-41. What do you see being the biggest objective the Pirates have to get through this week to be able to at least come out of here not falling way behind and staying right in the playoff hunt?
Got to score runs. Pitching's going to be there. It just is. We've seen the Pirates play against these teams before. The Mets swept them, and the Cardinals took 2 of 3. And I would say of those 5 losses, 3 of them were very, very winnable games, if not more. So they can't afford to lose close games at these teams. They've got to find a way to come out on top. St. Louis is a team that I look at as one of the more underrated teams in baseball right now. I actually think they're going to be a team that, if I had to bet money, they would be one of the 3 wildcard teams that I think will continue this. I just like how sustainable they look right now. The Mets, who knows, man? I mean, they're the Mets. Like you could say that about any Mets team since 1986. Who knows? Like, sure, they look good today, but tomorrow, you know, Grimace could go away forever, and who knows what would happen. So
that is a wild.
In all seriousness, I mean, the Mets are playing, and the Mets were the best team in baseball in June. But again, they're the Mets. You don't know. Right. July Mets could be totally different. But, I mean, these are two teams that are playing very well right now, and the Pirates have a chance to really make a statement. If they can come in to their own ballpark and take a series, 2 of 3 from the Cardinals and take 3 of 4 from the Mets – or earn a sweep over either one of them, that's a season-changing series win because you're heading into that. After these 7 games, you're going to Milwaukee for 3. So the next 10 games, really, Chris, are going to heavily determine how the rest of this season goes. With 3 against St. Louis, 4 against New York, and 3 against Milwaukee, if you win 7 of those 10, not only do you have a winning record now, but you're in a pretty much a playoff position heading into the All-Star break. And now you've got some time to build up conversations and really figure out a plan to go for it here. But if you lose six of these 10 or something like that, you join the Reds and the Cubs and, you know, everyone else who's kind of falling out of this playoff picture.
Absolutely. There's a lot of great things to talk about with the Pirates coming up here. They're off today, but they're back out there. Mitch Keller takes the mound Tuesday evening, 6:40 p.m. Our guy Noah Hiles will be there along with Andrew Destin and our team from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Noah, thanks so much for joining us. We'll have you back on again soon. It's going to be a fun week here watching what the Pirates do. We'll keep you updated with that here. Subscribe to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette to get all of their great work, and subscribe to the North Shore Drive podcast to be able to get more of these great episodes every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We're back Wednesday with more here on the North Shore Drive podcast. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all the sports coverage from the Post-Gazette that we have to offer, visit post-gazette.com.